Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, good news about up-and-coming young engineering talent coming out of, say, Hofstra University. Andy Gladding is with us. He's a New York City engineer, works at Salem Radio, does national broadcasts, done some work for Newsmax and other national companies, as well as college radio, too. It's all coming up next on TWRTS.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by Max Connect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from our microphones to the light bulb at the top of the tower, like that one right there, or maybe a bright strobe light, but I'm not putting one of those in here. Not. It's taken me 10 years to get that baby in here. I'm Kirk Harnack in the Nashville Telos Alliance studio here in Nashville, Tennessee. Delighted to be here. Yes, I got it all decorated and got the fake fire going, got the real light bulb there from the top of the tower, the TWRTS sign, got my stockings hung with care, and even my dentist decided to show up today. So, oh, and my son's stocking is right up there. We're glad you could join us. I hope you're having a great holiday season and looking forward to a little respite from the madness, which has been 2020. Maybe you can take a day or two off and relax and unwind a little bit. It's cold here in Nashville. We had a little bit of ice on the streets this morning, and that was fun getting around, taking the kid to school this morning and going to the post office. So that's my world today. Let's check in with my buddy Chris Tobin, my co-host. Chris, how are you, buddy? Good to see you.
I'm doing well. As far as the weather is concerned, it is chilly around here. It's about 30 degrees Fahrenheit. We've had several inches of snow on the ground across the metropolitan area, some places about a foot and a half. I just came in from across the river to the studios. We have a show tonight to do, a public affairs show, and it was a heck of a drive, I have to say. And it's fun. It's always fun watching plows put more snow on the sidewalks and the curbside. So you're trying to navigate the streets and it just doesn't work out. But it's life in the big city.
I always wonder about you New Yorkers. Now, you just said drive. Did you actually drive, what, your own car to work?
Today I drove my own car because I started looking at public transportation and realized, oh, by the time I leave this evening, there's a good chance they may be shutting it down again. Yeah, we have people now don't understand how to work things, so it's like, oh my God, there's ice. Never mind, shut down. So I'm not taking that chance. It happened once before during a storm.
Oh, geez. See, I never know if my friends in New York actually own a car or not. And Chris, I'm actually a little surprised that you do own a car. I wouldn't be surprised either way, I should say, if you told me, no, I don't own a car. Or if you told me, when I used to go to High Island or when I go to various places, you know, I take public transport or borrow a car, take an Uber or Lyft. So it wouldn't surprise me either way. That's got to be not cheap, owning a car in New York City, especially having a place to put it.
The place to put it is a family member's driveway, so it helps. I do freelance work. I do like to travel up north to a friend of mine's place, so I get to enjoy the woods. So it's easier to own the car, do it that way, than try to rent something or do those daily rental doodads, like a Zipcar or something, because it's just beyond the range of where you get it for a reasonable price.
Well, since you are a car owner, you know that there are expenses. Today, I got a great Christmas present. I got a $1,000 bill to fix my BMW, and it was just the radiator reservoir tank and the dipstick with the Hall effect sensor that tells you it's low on coolant, and some other hose. For years it has said low on coolant, and that's because the little magnet broke off from the dipstick that checks the coolant level. And I put up with that for years. Just okay, coolant low. I check it about every fifth time I get out. It's always fine. Except lately I got out and, oh, where's the coolant? It's not there. Maybe the dipstick is right. So, I fill it up and like 2 days later, it's where's the coolant? So it turned out there was a leak and the leak led to $1,000. Woohoo.
Oh my goodness.
The joys of owning a 16-year-old BMW.
There's some upkeep required. Yep, there's an upkeep required, oversight on a motor vehicle. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, there is. Well, speaking of upkeep required, let's bring our guest in. I just met this guy, Andy Gladding. Andy, welcome into the show. I'm so glad you're here.
Hey, it's great to be here. What a cool thing that we can all do this today from different parts of the world. This is great.
Andy, I think I know where you are, and I think maybe I've been in that room in the past. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who Andy Gladding is before we get the show really started? Who are you?
Well, right now, I'm sitting in the world-famous engineering shop for the Salem, New York City cluster, which includes WMCA 570 and WNYM, formerly WWDJ 970 AM. I'm the station group's chief engineer for this particular market, in addition to being the chief engineer for WRHU, Hempstead, Radio Hofstra University, and a few other smaller stations on Long Island, namely WPOB and WKWZ. So from dawn till dusk, it's usually radio. And every once in a while, I moonlight over at Newsmax TV. But I don't know if my agent wants me to talk about that just yet, but we'll have to talk about that later in the program.
Well, now, you're moonlighting on...
on the dark side.
On Newsmax, are you one of the opinionated hosts, or do you do something else there?
No, I'm one of the opinionated people that behind the scenes that usually yells at the TV from the engineering office. That's normally my biggest contribution to the commentary and content. Although I normally do make sure we chat with the guests beforehand to make sure at least you can hear them and see them. So that's half the job right there, you know.
I can tell we've got a lot to talk about. Like I said, I've been in the office you're sitting in now, and up and down the hallways where the studios are at what used to be WOR radio a long time ago. And our yes. friend Tom Ray was the guy who originally built those studios out, I believe.
Yes. And there are traces of the great Tom Ray all over this facility. one of the things, namely, is the fact that it's still operating quite well 20 years later. So we could definitely give Tom and his wisdom and expertise a round of applause for that, because the place is quite fabulous, actually, and has served both tenants, previous WOR and now Salem, to a very high degree of capacity and broadcast while they've been in this facility. Tom was a very always thinking ahead broadcast engineer, because I know my first day working here, I walked in, and the first thing you see when you come into the engineering shop was a rollaway bed with a blanket on it. So, Tom definitely, had a lot of commitment to the facility. I mean, the engineering people were literally willing to sleep here during a snowstorm.
Wow. Wow. Tom took me into his office. Now, not the shop, but his office. And maybe it wasn't his office. I don't know. Somebody's office. And it had a beautiful window out the side overlooking... Well, okay, it's a radio
Trinity
joke.
Church.
Overlooking a graveyard, right? A church and the church's graveyard. Church. And Tom would say, well, there goes our audience right there.
Well, the nice thing about that is at least you always know where you can find your audience. You never have to look for
it. There you go. I'm sorry, Chris, what did you add, Chris?
I said I've worked at stations where they would say the format was 65 to dead. And Tom and I would look out that window and just look at each other and go, what do you think, 65 or 55? I'm going with 65. Okay. Tom did a great job at that facility. He did a great job at that facility.
He did, and a lot of that, that technology was new. That was
absolutely
the first multi studio Axia build. In fact, it was right there in that building, Andy Gladding, right there in that building that we found out that the HP switches that we thought were good for live wire and audio over IP didn't work so good for multiple stations. And so that's why some different switches were put in there. But I think I heard a story, those got ripped out with an ownership change, and you probably have some different ones in there now.
Oh yeah, and I'd like to say that they were, probably, state of the art new at the time, but probably it was whatever got dragged over from the other facility that moved in here. So, but yeah, it's still working quite well, and we haven't. I mean, I haven't really seen anything other than performance and excellence out of it so far.
You've got over your shoulder there a piece of gear that I've got the same thing over my shoulder here. It's the original Axia router selector node. So it's got buttons like a radio, right? And you can pre-program them for different channels of Axia to monitor different things. It's a great monitor, puts out great audio, And I use it here for monitoring. In fact, this is the output of this also feeds these meters here. So I can punch up different things on these meters if I can find something else on. There we go. There's some audio that's not me, and there's some audio that is me. What do you use your router selector for that's over your shoulder?
Well, this is a very, very high tech, a very advanced, you know, engineering office system. This is called the what's on the air now box. So that's we could turn around hot take selector for my head, basically. But that was put in by my predecessor, Stuart Engelke, who also had quite an impact on both of the AM stations that this the company currently operates out of the facility. Stu was with Salem for about 40 years, so there's traces of him everywhere along this place, and I don't anticipate that they're going to be going away anytime soon.
I remember dealing with Stuart just a bit. And by the way, now we actually have a different piece of gear that some people that you can use as a router selector, but it's actually an intercom. So it's the Infinity Intercom. And so I've got the same I can bring up a channel here. Or this one. Or this one. Yeah, so I'm just, you know, as if I was monitoring, you know, some other intercom. It's actually just an Axia channel on my network here at the house. So that's an option for monitoring lots of different channels.
That's very handy. Actually, when we conclude, I want to chat with you about some other options here, because we're building out a new sort of master control channel over the next couple of weeks. But some of the to have you will be very useful for and handy.
And Chris Tobin, not long after WOR got built out with, you know, again, 15, 16, 17 years ago, Livewire, I think you said 20, it was almost 20. Chris built out another facility in New York City and you know, probably the second Livewire facility in New York City. Right, Chris?
Yes. We did introduce Livewire to the staff of 1010 Winds, the old news station. We were looking for some new ways to create content, cover the news around the city, and Livewire met the bill. At the time, it was exactly the thing we needed to do, and we put it to its test just as Tom did with his facility.
Well, tell you what, we're going to get started in just a minute with some stories from Andy Gladding, but first we're going to check out one of our sponsors, and that is from Broadcasters General Store. One of the lines that they carry is broadcast tools. Now, if you've been around very long at all as an engineer, you know that Broadcast Tools, Don Wingett, makes a lot of amazing devices. In fact, every time I've used a piece of Broadcast Tools gear, I've been amazed and almost overwhelmed with the things that it can do that I really didn't even realize. They're always more sophisticated and more capable than what you bought them for. Used to use them, you know, as satellite receiver switchers to switch different channels, all kinds of different functions that broadcast tool switchers do. The one that we're talking about, and we have been talking about for quite a while, is the ProMix 4. This is a bit of a departure. You know, a lot of broadcast tools products are one rack unit or half a rack unit. Or a third of a rack unit in size. This is an audio console sized device, the ProMix 4. The ProMix 4 is actually a little small, convenient, and very specifically designed audio mixing console. Now, you notice one thing about it, it's not stereo, it's mono. So it's designed to run out to remote broadcasts, to sports broadcasts, to be that little extra mono mixer. Maybe you just need to do some voice tracking. And you need to get your voice in there. Well, the ProMix 4 can really, really help you out with this because of the things that it can do. For example, it's full-featured mono mixing. It has three combination mic line inputs and a dedicated fourth input that may be switched between a balanced line input and the built-in USB audio interface. So, yeah, you can just plug this thing right into a PC or a Mac. It works with both. And use audio, mix audio from the PC or Mac, and then send audio back to it. Maybe you're running a codec on the PC or Mac. Maybe you're running something like CleanFeed, or even you're doing Skype or Zoom or something like that. You can certainly use it that way. It has 3/4-inch stereo headphone outputs. Those are included with individual controls for volume, mix, and pan. So you can have custom headphone mixes for each user. Other features include a switch selectable program limiter. So if you've got a loud sports announcer, I always use the phrase, he shoots, he scores, because that's pretty loud. It'll take care of that. It won't, you know, overload your program line that you're feeding. It has an XLR program output, a monitor output with muting. Now, that's unseen typically in these small consoles, especially if you buy, you know, one that's meant for music or a little home studio. So it does have monitor muting, volume control, a mix minus output for connection to an external telephone hybrid, and an on-air light relay output. It's got all those things. And it's available from our friends at Broadcasters General Store, BGS, Broadcasters General Store. And the website for that is bgs.cc. The phone number is 352-622-7700. 352-622-7700. And that's where you can go get your Broadcast Tools Pro Mix 4. By the way, there's a bunch of accessories that go along with the Pro Mix 4. You've got, you know, little pods for your announcers to have in front of them, to have individual controls. If they're not right in front of the mixer itself, maybe you've got a producer doing that. You've got headphones. It's just a lot of accessories for this from Broadcast Tools. Thanks a lot, Broadcast Tools and Broadcaster General Store for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. All right, Chris Tobin's along, and he got some snow, and Andy Gladding is along. Andy, do you live right in the New York City area yourself, since you work downtown?
Oh, yeah, I live in Brooklyn, which normally is about a 30-minute drive home. Yesterday it was considerably longer. You know, people don't generally know how to drive in the snow on a good day, and even worse when it's snowing out, so... Took a little while to get home last night.
Oh my gosh! Oh my. Hey, Chris. You know, since you know Andy, please feel welcome to jump right in and embarrass. I mean, ask him some questions. That'd be great. So, Andy, you've spoken several times about Hofstra, and I don't know much about Hofstra University other than it's in your area. There is it in Brooklyn? Is that where it is?
No, Hofstra's on Long Island. Actually the home of the Hofstra Pride sports franchise for all of us sports fans out there. And also, conveniently, this is where I come in, the WRHU, which is Long Island's oldest non-commercial radio station. They've been around since, we just had our 60th anniversary last year. So they've been around for quite some time.
First,
as an AM station, and then as an FM later on.
Did you get started in your broadcast engineering career at that station?
Yes, and it was by pure accident, actually. I went to Hofstra to do music production, and at the time, you know, the university had, at the School of Music, they had a music production program, which was, you know, very interesting, something I was very interested in. But then I sort of accidentally wandered over to the other side of campus and found my way into the radio station and started chatting with the chief engineer at the time. His name was Joe DeRosa. And after spending a good hour and a half chatting with Joe, I said, well, this is something I think I really want to do because this is an interesting place and there's lots of cool people here. So it was just like, again, by pure accident, wandered in and said, oh, this is it. I think I'm going to do this now.
Gotcha. So when the experience at WRHU, I mean, at what point did you think about, well, maybe I shouldn't. Maybe I'm not going to go into music production after all. Which, by the way, I've seen pictures of you. What do you play? Keyboard, sing? What do you do musically?
Yeah, I play keys and write songs for a band called CFR. Although as I'm sure you can imagine, the performance opportunities in New York City have not been so fruitful right now. So being involved in broadcast engineering has been a much more solid career choice for the last year. That kind of worked out okay.
A lot of us. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, to answer your question, the decision was fairly early on in the game. I mean, you know, it became very clear that there was a future in broadcasting, especially if you wanted to work with technology and also interface with people at the same time and not just, you know, not spend all your time just staring at a screen or fixing things, but you could actually be working with the equipment, showing other people how to work with the equipment and be the resident sort of backbone for the station's technology area. And I that was very appealing to me because I like, well, you know, I like to work with the hardware, but I also like, you know, interfacing with people and doing and teaching and showing people how to use stuff. I said, well, this would be a really good fit. So, you know, the focus turned very quickly to that aspect of the business, you know, early on.
One of the interesting dichotomies I think we see in our business is we've got older engineers like me, Chris may be included. I think we're about the same age, where we cut our teeth, you know, on analog audio, And then we transitioned into some digital AES EBU audio. And then we've made the switch into audio over IP. Most of us, many of us have. Then I meet younger engineers who, well, they're great with IT. They really get the networking. They understand all about computers. And they even do computer audio. But they're weak in the interface between, you know, microphones, speakers, other things that may be analog or AES EBU. They're weak on that part of it, that last mile or first mile, if you will, or last meter or first meter with the interfacing. And so I've been to facilities, even here in the Nashville area, where they have really good IT people who, once the audio gets into that realm, they're great with it. No problem. But they got a real problem, you know, just wiring an XLR connector or understanding why some things are balanced and, you know, what may need to be unbalanced and when not to use unbalanced and so forth. And so I've seen a gap, a divide there, a crevasse, an abyss between these disciplines. And tell me your thoughts about that divide. You seem to be, because if you're a musician, you deal with that first or last meter, you know, anyway. But what do you see in students at Hofstra or other places, and how do you gap that divide?
Well, that's a really good question, because there's definitely an aha moment for the students when they recognize the interface between the analog audio portion or the electronical portion of the signal path, then when it becomes digitized. Making that jump was not as difficult 10, 15 years ago, because I think people kind of really more understood the idea that a micro, you know, electromagnetic device and you know, a guitar or any kind of instrument that was reproducing audio was doing it electronically as a signal. Whereas now, I had a student ask me a year or two ago what kind of network hub I needed to hook all the microphones up. Like they would need to go through like a network switch. And I said, that it doesn't really work that way. They said, well, why not? I said, because this is a totally different idea, the way this operates. This is not a digital device. So it's almost like a backwards aha moment when they finally do realize what it is you're explaining. But you have to get them there. So, you know, I think, you know, getting to that point, you can, you know, that's where you can bring out the oscilloscope and you say, look, this is what a wave actually looks like. Here's what a waveform is. And here's what a stereo waveform looks like, and understanding that there's just a difference between the two channels. You know, they definitely understand, you know, the concept of stereo left and right, but looking at it visually, they say, oh, okay, that's why this actually happens this way. And that's a really special thing. But you have to take the time to really get them to understand it, or else they will lose interest and sort of wander into something else. They'll move into a different field, because it's just a little too mysterious for them to understand without that extra kick of explanation. But you're right. There definitely is, unless you provide that information ahead of time, they're not going to really get it and not going to want to go into it. So yeah, there is definitely a gap there between understanding what the concept of analog and how a linear editing device works, and that the idea is that all the analog concepts have been moved into the digital realm. That's why we call a cart deck or a virtual deck is still called a deck, because it's named after a tape deck, or what a reel is, and that kind of thing. Then once they understand the history of it, it makes a lot more sense to them.
That's using an oscilloscope to demonstrate some of these ideas, that seems like a really good idea. And I do think there may be a window of opportunity where if an IT oriented young person, if they are properly led into the world of analog audio, which of course is where most audio, organic audio, begins and ends, right? That if they're led into that, then they can get it. But if they are frustrated by it, as you said, then they may close the door on that opportunity completely and choose to never really understand that. Oh, that's too hard. That's mystical. That's not where I want to go after all, because it was kind of hard at first, or it was different. Whereas people who, of course, who grew up with analog audio may find that packets are pretty darn difficult and mysterious themselves. How can you have 200 phone calls on a piece of Ethernet cable? Well, you can. We can. Did this happen pretty organically for you, being both in music and growing up in the world of computers?
Well, you know, that's kind of an integrated journey. I mean, I have two parents that are both educators. You know, my father was a music teacher for about 30 years, and my mother was worked in primary for a good 35 years. So they, you know, teaching was sort of a thing that anything you learned growing up was always a lesson behind it or a purpose to it. From both my parents, they were very, the idea of learning was very important. And again, having a sort of a goal to what it was we were talking about and having a solution being developed was sort of that was the way it went, you know, kind of the way it worked. So when it came time to explain this to the students, the position itself, the WR2 position is really a maintenance engineering position, but because it happens, you know, during a point of time in the evening, usually during non-COVID situations, but even with COVID, where the students, it's an evening shift. It's from 4 to 11 o'clock at night. So you just naturally have curious students hanging out by your office door. And I tend to leave that door open by design. I want them to come in and ask questions because the engineering shop, WRHU, is where we keep the head-end equipment for the radio station. So you've got a rack full of devices with meters and older technology mixed with our newer routing and mixing system, and they have questions. They want to know how it works and what it does. And you know, there's one school of thought where you say, well, we have to keep the students away from the equipment because they might break it. And I understand that there's some value from a financial perspective in that, and certainly liability as far as the university would be concerned. But at the same time, you know, we are a college, so part of the educational mission of the station should be to show students how the equipment works and how the devices operate. And it's okay if they do break them because we'll just fix them. I mean, it's radio gear. It's not that hard to put back together unless you drop a soda or a coffee into it. So that's kind of where that came from. That, you know, it was my Thursday night engineering shift was supposed to be, you know, fixing broken equipment and, you know, resetting a tray on a CD player or cleaning out a tape machine. Suddenly became more of, I call it open door engineering, because it was students just walking through the open door and they have questions and we try to answer them. That's the spirit of being an engineer. You come in with questions. We want to try to provide solutions. So I think that's been a very exciting offshoot of what started as something completely different has now become almost a real fun little perk of the job. One of my favorite things to do during the semester is when we talk, you know, going back to the scope, is that I have a couple of analog keyboards going back to the late 70s, early 80s that have knobs, you know, knob controls on them. So you can change the oscillator, the filter, the envelopes. And when you can display the sound on the scope as well as the speaker at the same time, then the operator, who is used to just doing everything on a screen and swiping on a phone, and this is just one button does everything, now has a palette, if you will, an audio palette in front of them where they can create this beautiful, delicious canvas of sound. And then they can see it in front of them on the scope. And this is what the sound looks like. And this is what it looks like to your ear. I mean, you do that and suddenly it takes the adventure into a real different part of the brain. So that's one of my absolute favorite courses. Well, we only do it once, you know, at the end of the semester, but you get a couple of different keyboards. You know, this is what a square wave looks like. And this is what a sawtooth wave looks like. And then you can run it through all the filters, and then it gets really exciting very quickly.
That I would love to be a fly on the wall and see that. See the light turn on inside kids' heads, you know, college students' heads about the sounds they're hearing and the waveform and how, okay, that makes – now we're making harmonics. And then if you could show it on an FFT display to show, the sine wave that was one peak now becomes a whole field of peaks. And hear that,
oh,
you know, the thing I've always wanted to help students understand, and I hope some people teach it, is the idea of audio masking. So you play, you know, some tone, let's say an 800 hertz tone, and you look at it on an FFT, and then you introduce a second tone that's maybe 780 hertz, and you can bring that second tone way up there. I mean, within 12, 15 dB of the first tone, and you don't hear it, but you see it, and you say, that's how MP3 works. That's how psychoacoustic masking. We don't have to code that other tone because you can't hear it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's actually a pretty good idea. Because, and again, the best part about the students is they're at a point where they're adults, essentially. I mean, they're young adults, but they're adults. So providing them with adult-like content in terms of technology, I think is really important because they become part of the process, and you want them to become part of the process. My goal is not to is not to, you know, talk about how great, you know, I can be at doing my job at WRHU. My goal is to get them excited about doing this so that they can go and become really good at what they want to do, whether it's broadcast engineering or it's being on air or it's being something completely different. You know, you want to go be, you know, become a you know, mathematician. But the goal is to get them inspired about something, and then they can take that energy and continue to let it grow and make it something really special. And that's kind of the purpose of our workshops on Thursdays, is to, you know, let's find a topic. We talk about everything. I mean, it doesn't just have to be broadcast engineering, but they'll bring all sorts of questions and issues to the table that sometimes it's just about being a 20-year-old, you know, and that's fine too. There's nothing wrong with asking that question. You know, why is this an issue? How come I'm seeing this a certain way? No problem. Let's figure it out. You know, let's get a solution to it.
Two of your other the stations that you're working at full time there for Salem. Well, you got a 5 kilowatt WMCA and a 50 kilowatt AM station. You have two AM stations. Tell me a little bit about engineering. First of all, let's start at the transmitter, and then later on, coming up, probably after our next break, we're going to talk about, you know, engineering for some nationwide talent that you have to engineer for. And I know Chris has plenty of experience with that as well. But tell me about the AM stations that you have there, that Salem has there.
Well, it's really cool, and this is it. Really, I kind of joked that I went from my first job was working in Fox News Radio for Fox Television, and you know, now I'm working for an AM radio station. So I said, I couldn't wait for my career to go back into the exciting world of leaving TV for the exciting world of AM radio. But it's something I really always wanted to do because it is a challenge. Working with AM radio stations is a challenge because there's not a whole lot of people that do it and do it well. Luckily, because we're in New York, we have folks like Chris Tobin and some other resources that are in the area who the fellow engineer put it to me a couple of years ago. It's like a black art, you know, because there's books written about it and there's a lot of concepts that are invented. But there's really no way to just say, I want to learn how to go be an AM radio broadcast engineer. You got to make some mistakes. And then the other challenge is that some of those mistakes may kill you. So it's a little terrifying at times, but it's also really, really exciting. So for me, it's even more exciting to be working for a legacy station like WMCA, which has been around for quite some time and has a very established and very long time transmitter location in the Meadowlands, which comes with its own set of urban legends and stories. Just because I always jokingly say it's on the road that you see on the Sopranos introduction. Going at the beginning, the intro to the TV show The Sopranos, that road, Belleville Turnpike, is where a lot of the shots are. So you've kind of feel like you're driving into The Sopranos every time you go out to that transmitter site. And so there's a little bit of a folklore about that site being out in the Meadowlands, especially when you're out there by yourself at night. It'd be a little creepy. But, you know, WMCA is a legacy AM station that has a tremendous history in New York. And I mean, even from the old neon sign on the side of the building that's been there for over 60 years, that you kind of feel like you're part of something really special in New York radio when you work for a facility like that. And that's the 5,000 watt AM station. And so it's a challenge to work on. And then we have the other site, you know, the WNYM facility, which is 50,000 watts, which comes with its own set of adventures over that site. So. But both sites have a pretty long time history with the New York and New Jersey area, and I think being a part of that is really special. And I really at this point in my career, I don't think I'd want to be anywhere else for the time being, because it's just such an interesting place to be. And there's great folks that are working for this company that really do excellent radio. That's one of the best things I can say about the Salem, New York cluster, is that the people that work at Salem, New York have been doing it for some time. And they make great radio. So being a part of that and working at those two sites, you can really see just how well they're doing what they do, you know?
So again, after the break, we'll talk about the nationwide network level audio engineering that has to get done. And I always look at that as kind of a special thing, because, you know, it's got to be right. We hope it's right, because if it's wrong, a lot of people are going to hear that. It's not of course anything in New York City you do wrong, a lot of people are going to hear it. So that's a factor too. I've never worked in a market quite that big. I'm a little curious though about the the 50 kilowatt transmitter. What kind of transmitter is it? And tell me about your STL. Because you got a different situation there. It used to be WOR where you are now. That was one STL. Tell me about what you do now for a link to the transmitter site.
Well, over at the 50 kilowatt, they have a Nautel transmitter. Now that one has been in place for a little while, and before the site was being fed by this facility, they were being fed locally from Hackensack. The studios were over in Hackensack, Hasbrook Heights. Now that has changed now that we're at 111 Broadway. So we no longer have the ability to do line of sight, which makes things a little challenging because that would really be ideal to have an STL on top of the building with UHF getting out there. And we can't do that with either site. So right now we've got a cornucopia, if you will, of data connections that service both locations. So we're doing IP audio for both sites, a couple of different variations of it. But one of the goals that I have is to provide a little more diversity. And actually, Chris Tobin and I were discussing this the last time we got together about minimizing points of failure. Or if you're going to have a few points of failure, at least having them places, because I think that's kind of the Achilles heel. Our telecom services become more consolidated. We lose the opportunity to have multiple vendors servicing a single site. You'll have four or five different vendors that are under different company names, but while they're still use Bone to get the information out there. So big deal. You have four different companies giving you an ISP, but they're going in on the same telephone pole. So that's something we have to look at with some diversification on how to make that work. Now, obviously, there are solutions, but those solutions, and I think the three of us on this call know how it goes,
Chris, you live in a tall building. I think maybe you should just provide relay services from your balcony. Would that work out for a lot of radio stations in New York City? You could make some money that way.
Sadly, no. I'm right in a spot where I'm in a valley that doesn't work for anybody. But that's okay. Because I don't want to have to deal with the monthly collections of people crying about their poverty-stricken operations, even though they've got
there is that.
Positive cash flow.
Gosh.
Andy knows what I'm talking about.
I know. I was going to suggest, actually, if you had the option, I was going to offer you a 12-pack a month. I mean, I figured that'd be pretty fair. I could deliver it right to your door. Domestic door quality would be fine. We'll make that happen for you, Chris.
Oh, gosh. Hey, we're here with Andy Gladding in New York City, Chris Tobin also in the New York City area, talking about radio and coming up. Andy's going to tell us about some of his experiences with nationwide broadcasts, both originated by Salem and also some originated by Newsmax, cable news network. So I'll be interested to hear about that. This Week in Radio Tech, episode 423, is brought to you in part by our friends at Broadcast Bionics. And man, you want to move into the future. Right now, today, you can do it with Broadcast Bionics. We'll hear from them. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Phil from Broadcast Bionics in the UK, and we've been helping broadcasters and podcasters to work remotely for some time. But in 2020, this has become more of a necessity for many. X-Screen, Bionic Studio, and our other products can be fully functional via the internet on a VPN connection or RDP session. If you have any type of Telos VX, HX6 or IQ6, you may already be using the free edition of X-Screen 2, giving you a software interface to go alongside your VSET controller. The subscription edition not only adds a cloud database and unrestricted workstation licenses, but also allows the user to call screen using a USB headset. Bionic Talk Show, part of the Bionic Studio, also allows this. Up until now, it's mainly been used for remote broadcasts, but now more and more stations have call screeners and producers working from home or socially distanced offices. The teams can still collaborate, communicate, and deliver programming with the help of our tools. Many routers will have a VPN option. Your local IT specialist can help with this. Using a VPN, our workstation client software can be run on a home PC or laptop as if it was running on a machine at the studio. With remote desktop, the software still runs on a PC at the station. Simple port forwarding on your router may be all that's required to then control that PC and deliver the headset audio from another device using RDP, which is available as part of Windows. For technical help, our support team are on hand. You can email them on support@bionics.co.uk. Combined with our Anywhere and Skype TX for Radio products, broadcast quality audio can be delivered from contributors around the corner or around the globe. They can even instant message with the shared chat windows and see the now playing information from within the Anywhere remote web interface. For more information, go to bionic.radio. We're helping broadcasters around the world to adapt to the new normal with innovative tools from Broadcast Bionics.
Thanks a lot to Broadcast Bionics for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech at bionics.radio. Check them out anywhere in the world. They have dealers around the world. And in the U.S., I believe Broadcast General Store handles most of their product line. Check it out. Hey, it's This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy New Year, and hopefully next year is going to be better for all of us. I was just looking where my dentist friend went, and I think he fell on the floor. Ah, wow, that's no good.
He went to the Island of Misfit Toys.
That's where I got him from. Now maybe he should go back there. All right. Sorry about that, dude. Hey, Chris, you know, coming up on Christmas Eve, that is what, next Thursday? Is that a week from tonight?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, Christmas Eve.
Oh, gosh, I've lost track of time.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's a week from tonight, Christmas Eve. Today's the 17th, add 7, that's 24. Yep, that's Christmas Eve.
Yes, that is correct. You are correct, sir.
Oh, gosh, I better get my shopping started.
It's a good time for deals. There's great deals to be had. You won't stand in line either.
I used to do all my shopping on December 24th. I set one day aside to do all my shopping, and that was it. Not anymore. Order some things online. But anyway, next week, Chris, our guest is who's our guest next? Oh yeah, John Bissett is going to be our guest next week. Yeah, it'll be a fun little Christmas time. In fact, if you guys in the audience, if you want to tune in, you could tune in with a little hat action like that, and that'd be just great. Put you in the mood, have a little hot toddy or a hot cocoa or whatever. By the way, I sometimes I break the rules and do the dumb thing. Earlier today with the Telos Alliance, Frank Foti and I did a little holiday fireside chat, and Frank told some great stories and we had a great time on that. And the show got started a few seconds late because I had a full cup of hot tea, and just seconds before the show started, I did something on my desktop here and I spilled it. And I spilled it right onto this.
Oh, my.
And, yeah, but this kept working anyway. I've spilled all kinds of junk on this, mostly water and tea, maybe some coffee. But anyway, I was amazed. It kept right on working. little Christmas blessings here and there. So we're talking with Andy Gladding in New York City. And Andy, the Salem Radio Network produces some nationwide shows, and one of them, at least one, maybe more, produced right in your area. Tell me about nationwide talk shows.
Well, it's great to have that happening here. We have Mike Gallagher is originating out of our New York facility, which I think is fascinating because he gets sent from us to SRN, and then we have to get him back on a satellite. So even though he's right down the hall, his audio comes back packaged from the radio network, which then we have to run out, through our master control over the air. So that's a pretty interesting setup. But, the nice thing about Mike is, on and off the air, he's a very, very interesting, well-spoken talent. But off the air, he had done a workshop for some of the students over at WRHU a couple of years ago during the Talkers Convention, where they broadcast live out of the RHU facility. And, Mike's doing his show, and he's all charged up, and he's doing his thing, with his political slant. And then the minute the mic is off, he turns around, because the students are working on a show, and he says, hey, you guys did a really nice job. You got great facilities here. This is so much fun. Oh, hold on a minute. He goes back on the air, does his thing. breaks, mic's off. Oh, he's chatting away. So it's really fun to watch that dynamic, especially working here at Salem, when you see the national talent come in, and they're right down the hall. They're like, oh, okay, hey, what's going on? I think, because everybody's doing everything remotely right now, we've had to service a lot of those guests using a wide variety of call-in technologies, which makes things very interesting. One of the main questions that come through my office on a pretty much a weekly basis are, can we make a different remote technology of the week happen? This week it's Zoom. a couple weeks ago it was Skype. And that seems to be across the board where somebody will say, hey, I have this platform. We really want to use it. It sounds like a great idea. Okay, well, it's up to you to make it, go figure out how to make it work. So that's been sort of the adventure with SRN and Network the last couple of months is to, okay, how do we get these guests in reliably, remotely, and make sure it sounds good and it's still broadcast quality without them actually being in the studio. So it's been, that's been a little bit of an adventure.
What are you finding as being some of the better or more common or more useful remote technologies for bringing guests in? I mean, you know, Comrex Opal or Telus Zip or some kind of G722. Well, what do you find?
Interestingly enough, on the TV side, most of the TV network stuff, the networks are using a kind of a mixed bag of different ISP tech based technology. But Skype has been sort of the leader for the mid-level budget stuff. I mean, Skype has a wide variety of products that they license out or software they license out to different platforms where you can break it out into multiple channels. Now, the main problem with using a platform like Zoom is there's really no diversity control over the feeds. You know, you kind of have everybody being mixed by Zoom in the cloud. Then you get it at your location through the client as one feed. So there's no real way to control the levels, control the video, whereas some of the other solutions are designed for, you know, for control in the studio. One of the cool things that I've seen that Comrex has is they have the FieldTap app. So whereas at one point you needed to have a remote access box out in the field, I've come into a couple of situations where we've had people that have wanted to get on the air and they don't have, or they've either had an access device that they're not near because they've gotten separated from it because of COVID or there's a weather issue. So I've just had them put FieldTap on their phone and it's worked really well. And the audio sounds great. It's coming in with the Comrex codec. And that seems to be right now our biggest go-to for the moment, at least here at SRN.
Thinking again about doing the Mike Gallagher show, and you say he's just down the hall in one of the studios, but what considerations do you give to the studio and the infrastructure in that studio that you might not give to another studio? What do you do above and beyond to try to make sure that there's not a problem in there?
Oh, well, that's a great question. So that show requires a greater number of personnel. And again, that's not a Salem, New York show. That's a network show. So there are more people that are involved in it. So we have to make sure they're socially distanced. They have a video component to that show that needs to come out of that room. So that operator needs to be protected. The biggest thing is keeping, and when Mike's in New York, he has to be kind of isolated as well. So it's the idea of making sure that we're, that the studio has either plexiglass or plastic set up to keep the staff separated, distanced, and safe, and the ventilation is working properly. So all that ends up kind of getting kicked back down the hall towards my office because who else are they going to go to for it? So that's been a real kind of a technical challenge to make sure that show is executed properly.
In our pre-show meeting, we talked a little bit about another show that you've been involved with. That's Joe Piscopo. Tell me about that.
Well, Joe is great. Joe is a tremendous broadcaster, especially for this market, because he sounds like the kind of guy you want to go out and have a beer with. I mean, I love working with Joe. He's a very nice guy, super professional, and he knows he's got a Rolodex that includes probably anybody who's anybody in the tri-state area, which makes things really interesting because he's got national level guests that'll call into his show. I had Rudy Giuliani on yesterday. He's got all sorts of folks that call in from different New York City and New Jersey politicians that seems like he has a pretty a pretty regular relationship with, and that's on both sides of the aisle, Democratic and Republican. And the best part about Joe is he's very easy to work with. Right now Joe is doing the show out of his house, so he's using a Comrex access and he's dialing in remotely every morning. And he's got his production team is in the studio. He's got a producer, and he's got his co-host Al, his producer Joe Spilia, who are all operating, as normal. And it might as well be like Joe's sitting there, but he's not. He's at his place out in Jersey. So that's it's great to hear, and maintain the local coverage. And the best part about Joe is we set him up actually with the Telus remote screening software, so he can take calls remotely. And he's just got a little laptop in front of him, and he's punching and taking the calls right from there.
So he's doing it.
Yeah, he's doing it from his studio in New Jersey. He loves it. makes him feel like he's more, is a little more of an intimate connection with the caller,
What have you guys gone to in terms of a phone system there at Salem? Because when I helped Tom Ray put things together, I think it was 2X12s or NX12s. It was ISDN technology. What is it now?
No, we're using that the latest Telos system,
VX.
VX system. So it's the IP version. And that's kind of cool because that's managed by by Salem's corporate network. So we have support on that in case things go awry, but they're very versed in dealing with that and troubleshooting it. So they have, it goes to the corporate SIP connection. That's very, very reliable.
So we don't have a whole lot of time left. I want to make sure we talk about SBE and your desire to have a student chapter, because you work with students at Hofstra and you see that, hey, there are young people, college students, who are interested in perhaps a broadcast audio track of learning and career. What are your thoughts about a student chapter for SBE there?
Well, that's one of my projects right now is that I'm working with the Hofstra University, the couple of different departments for student activities to try to get a student chapter of the SBE established on campus. And we've spoken with the folks at Chapter 15, the SBE New York chapter, and they've been very helpful. Andy Cummins and Conrad Troutman have been tremendous in trying to get this to move along, and we definitely have support from the university, so I'm just making sure we have the students behind it to make it a reality, because at the end of the day it's really going to be up to the students to make it fly. But I think it's very important because SBE provides so much in terms of training, pre-professional development, certifications through the Ennis workshops, and obviously a ton of networking with established industry professionals. I don't particularly think that there is anything some of the top folks in the business before they graduate, because then they can kind of get an idea of where they want to where they want to go, what they want to do, and talk to people who can give them guidance. And I think what I can see, at least from my experience working with the students, is that at that age, they're looking for something to do. They're looking for what they want to be passionate about, and they might not know it. So having the chance to make that connection early on, you would have the opportunity to then speak with a professional in the field and say, is this something I really want to do? And you might get there and say, you know what, this really isn't for me. Or you might say, there's maybe a different part of the business I want to go into. But if you do connect and can become interested in BO&E or operations and engineering, there are so many opportunities in New York. And we recognize, I think everybody recognizes, that there is not a whole lot of people going into this field. But yet it's a legitimate field. It pays well. There are tremendous opportunities, and you can do some wonderful things working in this part of the business. Exciting things. You can travel. You can go places. You can, you can work for a radio station at the farthest corner of the world, right? there's so many great things you can do. So I think that it's important to provide those opportunities as early as possible for the students that are interested, because if they can make that connection, man, they're in for a one heck of a ride,
Chris Tobin, I want to hear your thoughts too on some of the things that Andy's talked about. There was, it seems like there was one more thing, Andy, that I wanted to ask you about. And that is the experience over at Newsmax. Newsmax is with this election cycle and the what's going on during it. Newsmax has risen quite a bit in its ratings. And I personally know one of the anchors there, guy Bob Sellers. Worked here in Nashville. I used to do weather on a Fox affiliate, a TV station that Bob was one of the morning anchors. And a lot of respect for Bob, but Newsmax doesn't quite have the look and feel yet of the other big networks, and it just feels like, hey, shoestring, but we're growing. And you kind of mentioned the audio build out was kind of that way too. Talk to me about audio at a up and coming or trying to up and come TV network.
Oh, sure. Well, the interesting thing about Newsmax is I think it's they're kind of like the come from behind crew. They definitely, what they lack in the technology, or at the time they lacked in technology, they made up for in persistence. And my the way I got introduced with them was I was working with a gentleman by the name of John Creeley that was their director of engineering at the time and said, hey, we need to build an audio and video control room. And I just need you to come in and knock this out. It's a 2-week project and, you know, come in and out, you'll be done. And 2 weeks turned into, a year and a half later that they're still helping them out with support, with technical support. But it's an interesting adventure working for them because they are now in a position that they've kind of proven that they can, get an audience and they can certainly get ratings. So now that proof is there, they are, I think, letting the technology catch up to the content, which is usually not the way it works from a traditional network sense. You go out, you spend the money, you build a high-end studio, then you start doing programming. These guys went about it a little bit differently. They got the programming, then they went out and built everything. But the team they have in place now from the engineering side is tremendous. They have the gentleman in charge, his name is Walter Rapps. He was the SVP of CBS Sports for a good 15, 20 years. Definitely knows what he's doing. And has brought in a lot of really great people to advance that. So it's nice to see they're putting the emphasis on the way the content and the product looks going forward. Because I think you'll see that because now they have the expectation that they're becoming a quote unquote an alternative to Fox, they're going to have to become that now. By design they've become the story that they're telling.
Chris, you know Andy, you live there in the same area, cross paths with him now and then. What haven't we asked Andy that you might like to bring out story wise?
Oh, no, we've asked all the good questions. No, this is good stuff. It's all the good questions, and I think the most important takeaway should be Andy's drive to get the student SBE concept off the ground and let it run. Sort of like a mentorship thing. And as Andy knows, I've been working with one of the students he works with at Hofstra. And he's been very good and asking a lot of good questions. And I've had the opportunity to show him why you do things a certain way and not a certain way and how to be safe when doing these things. One of them is climbing towers. Andy knows who that is, right?
Oh, yeah. Ooh. And he's having a great time. He's having a real great time.
But, yeah, we had some good times up on the tower. He's trying to learn how to do climbing and safety. And I was explaining to him a few things, and he's watching me hang from a part of the structure. I was like, well, how do you know not to fall? I was like, well, that's what the practice and training's about. And that's why I have several different ways to connect. That's why we do this. And I said, that's why you stay focused. I said, why are you using your phone right now? Well, I'm doing, no. You're my safety man. Put the phone away and you keep an eye on me while I'm hanging, hooding up a microwave dish. I said, this is how it works. And Andy, you can ask John about that because we did have a fun time. What's that?
They'll get a great picture of you as you're falling off the side of the tower.
Oh, this is true, but I don't need that kind of evidence. But
talking about viral video, holy cow!
But fail army. The thing is, the student SBE concept is exactly that's what it is. The opportunity to put somebody in a position who is interested, or maybe not interested, or not sure. At least when he and I are up on the tower, and he's standing there, 900 feet above the city line, strapped to a catwalk, and he's like thinking, "Is this what I want to do?" It's like. There's your opportunity. You can't say you just told about it. You didn't see a video. You actually experienced it, and you'll know exactly from your experience whether you're interested in continuing on. And I think that's a great way for a lot of folks to operate, even if it's working in the studio side by side. Hey, when I first started out in the business, I had a chance to work with folks and literally stand in control rooms at TV networks. And so, okay, that's Peter Jennings through the glass, isn't he? He goes, yeah, just stay here in the corner. Just watch how we do things. I'm like, okay, got it. And that's why I'm always an advocate of workflow understanding at a business, at an operation. Understand the workflow and then go backwards from that to get everything else you want in place.
Good point. Excellent point, Chris. Hey, you're watching This Week in Radio Tech, episode 523 with Andy Gladding, New York City audio broadcast engineer and musician. Also, Chris Tobin, of course, is with us as my co-host. And we're going to be back in a minute with our tips of the week, so you won't want to miss that. And I need to promo something that we're going to do next week. And I'm going to need a little bit of help from Chris, an idea to figure out how to do this. But we're going to give away three Android tablets on next week's show. It'll be Christmas Eve. We'll give these away with John Bissett with us. And I really don't know for sure how we're going to, by what method we're going to randomly select some of our viewers. But you want to be viewing. We'll come up with something. And we'll see if we can get registration for that started sometime, next week. I'd like to get people registered somehow for that. We'll find a solution online to get you registered. So this little tablet, I got to tell you, This ONN brand, this is apparently a brand of Walmart these days. And I bought one of these myself to try it out to see, okay, is this something I'd want to give away or is it just complete junk? It ain't bad. And I got to tell you, it was very inexpensive. Okay, This Week in Radio Tech could afford to buy four of them. We're going to give three away. I'm keeping one myself. And the real downside of this little guy is the speaker. The speaker is just awful. It is horrible. And if you lay the thing on its back, it doesn't have any ridges to hold it up and let the sound out. The sound just goes away if you lay it on its back. However, if you will pair it with your favorite little Bluetooth speaker, even a little free one that you get like at a trade show, it's great. It's what you'd expect from a under $50 tablet. But I'll tell you what, it's responsive. It works fine. I do Facebook and a little bit of Reddit and Twitter. I've been to websites and ordered stuff with it. And like I said, Facebook, it's good at YouTube videos. It can absolutely do videos. So anyway, hey, don't complain. It's free. If you win one, it's free. And it's worthwhile. Battery life is pretty good too. My son wants to steal mine. And I said, no, I kind of like it. I'll keep it around. But you know what? If you lose it, didn't cost all that much. So we're going to give those away next week on This Week in Radio Tech. We'll figure out some way to get that done. Ooh, I got to work on that. All right. Coming up in just a minute, we have some tips of the week. Andy doesn't know it, or maybe he does, but we're going to get a tip out of Andy and a tip out of Chris Tobin. And we'll be back right after this word from our friends at Max Connect Wireless. We'll be right back.
I'm Gary Morrill, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using Max Connect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. Max Connect. Check it out.
Thanks a lot to Josh Bone and for inventing Max Connect Wireless, for negotiating with the major carriers, Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile, to get you this level of data where your data is going to get through. So if you're doing streaming to a transmitter site, if you're at a remote site, Chris Tobin has used these many times to do live broadcast remotes and live streaming remotes from venues that were otherwise pretty darn busy. Max Connect Wireless is the place to go. MaxConnectWireless.com. Hey, our show is also brought to you by Angry Audio. My friend Mike Dosh up at Angry Audio, he designs all kinds of cool things. Plus, if you like Studio Hub, and you really ought to, that's where you get Studio Hub nowadays, from Angry Audio, because they own Studio Hub now. So your favorite adapters and dongles and the things that you love Studio Hub for, they've got them. But here's an Angry Audio product, the Bluetooth audio gadget. You know, if you're running a home studio, a podcast studio, and you just need to put a caller on the air, don't go the expense of a POTS line and the expensive phone hybrid. You can just use this. You can use the Bluetooth audio gadget with your cell phone. You just pair it up with your cell phone over Bluetooth, and lo and behold, your cell phone call audio goes right through the Bluetooth audio gadget. There's a pairing spring-loaded switch right there. See? Spring-loaded. So you can even have different people on your staff. If you've got different people cycling through a studio, then they can each get paired up to it. Or if you use this at home, obviously it's quick to pair. You can do two-way conversations through it. It's on the back, it's got audio ins, audio outs. So you hook it up to your little audio console, whether you've got an expensive console or a little cheap console. Either way, you just hook it right up to this. Your mix minus out, you send to the caller, and the caller audio coming back. So you carry on high quality, as good as can possibly be had, two-way conversations. You can also play audio out of your phone. So let's say you go out and you do an interview and you record the interview with the phone's audio recording app, or maybe you've got some songs on your phone that you want to play on the air. You're going to get the best audio quality that Bluetooth does through its a high quality profile with the Bluetooth connected to this. Check it out at angryaudio.com. That's angryaudio.com. And when you talk to your dealer, you want to buy some Studio Hub gear, be sure you ask for the real Studio Hub gear. It's really a good deal. It's well made. It's going to last you, and it won't disappoint you. Check it out. Thanks a lot to Angry Audio for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, it's time for our tips of the week. Andy, can I hit you up first, and you give a tip to our viewers and listeners? What would you like them to walk away with?
Oh, wow. I actually have to give a tip?
we can have Chris give a tip and then come back to you if you like.
Oh, no. I mean, I would say that my tip for the week for anybody listening would be when it's going to snow and you mm-hmm. have two transmitter sites that are both located out in New Jersey, one's in a swamp and the other one's behind a shopping mall, don't forget to make sure your gas or your generator diesel tank is full ahead of time, and almost have a mini heart attack when you realize you forgot to maybe check that ahead of time. Not saying that that's what happened to me yesterday, but definitely, you know, call the fuel company, ask for a fill up before the snowstorm. And also, in that same vein, you might want to have that plow company ready to go again, because, you know, you're going to want to make sure you can get to the transmitter, you know, if there's a, you know, 2-3 feet of snow blocking the entrance to the building, you're going to want to be able to get there if there's a problem. So that's my tip of the week.
And I would think that one of your problems, check me if I'm wrong, is that, you know, a city snow plow plows a road and creates a berm and ends up blocking access to a little used road or a private road that goes to your transmitter site. If you know that's a problem, you got to be ready to take care of that problem. Yeah.
Yeah, the city plow isn't really concerned about your need to get into the site. So that berm is definitely there. I mean, luckily, my father and I both just got matching Jeep Wranglers. So I was kind of hoping to maybe have to test it out. But at the same time, I said, if they can't get over that berm, I don't know how I'm going to explain this to the general manager. So this week in radio will be next week on the Help Wanted classifieds when you're looking for a new job.
All right, dealing with snow. You Florida broadcasters can forget about that segment right there. It doesn't apply to you. Chris, you had a tip of the week for us this week?
Oh, yeah. I spoke earlier about John, the student at Hofstra. Very good learner, very good person, does excellent work. I wasn't trying to rib him in a bad way, but it's important. What I was trying to get at was safety. So if you're working at your transmitter site, even your studios, and it's a situation where you need to make sure someone's there as a safety person, as I call it, you know, just in case of anything – remember to do that, especially transmitter sites. And Andy knows with his two facilities, 50,000 watt directional and his 5 kilowatt. You know, you don't want to be working around that transmitter room if by yourself at 2 a.m. if you have to get inside the box. And you know, you got to make sure you have somebody available. Or if you can't, then make sure you make arrangements for somebody to call you every 30 minutes or every 15 minutes, or you know, you call them. You call them if you tell them if you haven't heard from me, call immediately, and if not, call this number. And I say this because I've actually talked to people over the years who have had this situation happen, and I've been in situations where we've had some serious disasters take place because people weren't paying attention to the safety element. So you know, just remember those things. It's a simple thing. So when I razz anybody about, hey, what are you doing with your phone? We're on top of a tower or in a building of a transmitter. That's the reason why, not because I have something against you. It's just you got to stay focused. The trick here is focus. If you're not focused, then you're working on dangerous, you know, potentially high voltage equipment, and solid state transmitters have a lot of current. You can get hurt. Okay, the laws of physics don't change because you think you can bend them, and if you try to bend them, they will snap back at you in a very, very bad way.
Oh yeah. Thank you, Chris. I've got a little tip that actually I've got a 25-year-old tip of the week. 25 years. We're gonna flashback real quick to Fidelia Pack cart or any cart machine, any cart like this.
Yes.
This you know, those you youngsters, this is how we used to play commercials on the radio, and we even put songs on these things. And the top of the hour ID, you know, you hit the button, the pinch roller would come right up here, would squeeze that against the capstan and drag that tape right across the heads right there. The heads would be punched in there, and it would play, you know, your jingle, right? WNBC, you know, it'd play that jingle off there. Well, here's the tip. Here's the maintenance tip. If you've got to check, the sponge pads that are back here. And first of all, this one has fallen off. That sponge pad is no good. It's fallen down in there. So you couldn't really erase this thing very well, or play, you couldn't record on it probably, or erase it. And then here is where the playback head would touch. Now watch this. I'm going to touch it and watch how long it takes to return. Yeah, that sponge pad is no good.
That, there goes that, this high one, frequencies.
Yeah, this one. That's what that'll sound like if you play some audio off that. So there you go. That's your maintenance tip of the week. Don't let this happen to your carts because they're going to sound terrible.
But see, now if you had a Scotch car too, you don't have to worry about pressure pads.
Right, because they kept their own tension, right?
That's right.
They did.
Yeah, other issues. But yeah, that's a Scotch car. And the Audio Pass AA4s had a better quality pressure pad too.
Yeah, yep. These Fidelio packs were cheap and inexpensive, both.
They got the job done.
Andy Gladding, it's been great to get to know you over the last hour. I appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you.
Oh, anytime.
You, me, and Chris, when we can get together after COVID, we'll have to go out and get a slice.
Oh, absolutely.
I got the first round. Don't worry about it.
All right.
We have a great place for it, too.
Chris, thank you for being here on the show. I appreciate you being here. Safe drive home, please.
Yeah, take it slow. There's nobody on the road. It's great.
Oh, well, that's a benefit. All right. Hey, I want to say thanks to you, viewers and listeners, for joining in on This Week in Radio Tech. If you're watching on YouTube, please hit the like button and subscribe to the YouTube channel. And if you want to put a comment in the YouTube comments, that would be great, too. I sure would appreciate that. Thanks a lot to Suncast, our producer for the show. Always does a great job. And also thanks to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network, home of lots of other fine podcasts. Of course, our sponsors, terrific people, Broadcast Bionics, Broadcaster General Store, and Broadcast Tools, Max Connect Wireless, and Angry Audio. Thanks to all of you. Oh, and by the way, you know, we have a special good relationship with the folks at Radio Guide Magazine. Get yours, read it, and we'll be interviewing some of the authors from Radio Guide Magazine here on This Week in Radio Tech. And so check it out. It's good magazine. I've read it for years. You probably have too. They have more room for more in-depth articles there. And I like a lot of the how-to articles that they do in Radio Guide. Thanks a lot to Ray Topp for producing such a great magazine. We're going to see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.